Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
John Robinson coming up 3:30 or so. Joe Starkey will be with us at 4 o'clock. Legendary Cal broadcaster. Utah Beat reporter Josh Newman, he'll be in the 5 o'clock hour, so we got a whole bunch of guests on today's show. Big show today. Judah Newby, you guys excited? I'm a little nostalgic, and maybe it's just me.
I love being nostalgic. Yeah, it's great. Joe Starkey, I'm a huge fan of. Got to meet him for the first time at the Autzen press box when Cal visited Oregon a few years ago. The game got out of hand, but I remember I got to go meet Joe Starkey. So I went to his booth. I met him for the first time, and I said, what's one piece of advice you can give to an aspiring broadcaster, especially a play-by-play guy? And he just looked at me, and maybe it was because the game got so out of hand, but he looked at me and he said, son, always prepare for the blowout. And I'll never forget that. I was like, that's a good piece of advice. Over-prepare. Prepare for the blowout so you don't run out of things to say when you're losing by 28 points.
You know what's funny is I used to be, you know, when I first started in my career, I was working at a small community newspaper. I was like 25 years old, and I would go to Candlestick Park occasionally to go see a 49er game on a weekend. It was kind of a treat because, you know, you're covering Little League games during the week. You're putting out the paper, and they'd say, okay, who wants to go to the Niner game on Sunday? And you'd go, and then, you know, you'd have to work it, but at least you'd be in the press box, and, you know. And I remember being around and seeing Joe Starkey in the press box, and I was so shy, and I was so intimidated, I wouldn't say anything to him. And so I kicked myself because I think, gosh, I should have been networking. I should have been doing what you were doing, going up and talking to the guy. You know?
I think it worked out all right for you.
I don't know. Could have been somebody. Steven, are you nostalgic?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I'm not a huge announcer guy because I definitely didn't start in this business. I'm still relatively new. But of course, everyone knows the Cal Stanford band on the field call. So yeah, I'm excited to listen to that interview. And yeah, I mean, nostalgic is great. I love going back and, that's when I was at my peak, right? Peak athleticism, making great plays, was great.
I love it. Guys, let's talk about the games coming up this weekend. Let's start with that USC-UCLA game. I had friends today who are reaching out to me. They maybe or maybe not gambling on that game, who keep asking me what I think, how strongly do I feel about my pick, because my pick is UCLA 40, USC 37. That means the underdog UCLA, the home underdog, they're getting 2.5 points in this game. They win the game outright. I believe they're better. You know, how good do I feel about it? Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. It's not like my lock pick of the week, but I just think they're a little better, and I'm excusing their absence last week against Arizona. Guys, what do you think happens in that USC-UCLA rivalry game?
Yeah, I think you're right on. I think UCLA is going to win this game. And USC, they've played pretty well all season long, a little above expectations for me, definitely, and I think that luck's going to run out. I'm with you. I think UCLA overlooked Arizona, looking forward to this game against USC coming up because they still hold their destiny, right? If they beat USC, they still have a chance to get to the Pac-12 title game. So I think it's going to be a tough spot for USC to come in and just score with UCLA. I think UCLA's offense is going to be going. Charbonnet, the running back, has been he's been limited, I would say, the last few games. Played against Arizona, did not play against Arizona State, so I think he's going to be ready to go. And Chip Kelly wants to win this game, really put a stamp on this season, which has been a very successful one for UCLA. So I like UCLA in the game.
Yeah, as long as USC doesn't score at will, I like UCLA. Now, obviously, USC is very good offensively. How much does Travis Dye's absence impact them is the question. I think UCLA wins, though. So all the way around, I think it's a good day for the Bruins. It's kind of a narrative play as well, though, for me, too. I just think UCLA is going to find a way to get to Vegas, and Arizona was a blip on the radar. So I like UCLA to win outright on the field.
I keep looking at USC's schedule, and, you know, they beat Colorado last week. They ran it up on Colorado. They beat Cal the week before. They beat Arizona 45-37 on October 29th. I mean, there's a common opponent, but Arizona was in this brutal stretch where they were playing Oregon and Utah and USC and UCLA and Washington back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back. And so I kind of am looking at Arizona going, okay, were they just having a bad night? I saw USC in person on October 15th when they played at Utah. They looked really good on offense, really suspect on defense. They gave up 43 points to Utah and lost the game 43-42. It's their only loss of the year. But I'm looking for what their best win is. I kind of feel like it was the road win at Oregon State, like, you know, early in the year, their second conference game. Other than that, it's been less than impressive to me. And again, they do not play Washington. They do not play Oregon. I think they had the easiest path to get here with one loss, and they took advantage of that. So I'm betting that UCLA has just had enough of hearing about USC and that they're just a little more complete.
I agree with you. I think Oregon State is by far USC's best victory of the season so far. So, you know, you can say that USC's had a good year, like I just said, but they really haven't been, you know, really challenged a lot this season. They've been in a lot of close games lately. I think the Travis Dye injury is going to be a big missing point for USC. I know they're going to, you know, replace him with other five-star athletes and five-star running backs, but Travis Dye is one of those guys that, you know, he gets 4 or 5 yards a carry for USC, and he's really a solidifying piece to that offense. I think it's going to be a miss with that, him gone. So I agree. I think UCLA is the spot for them to get going and really, you know, put a nice bow on DTR's career, basically, to end it with a win over USC and have a chance to get to 10 wins if they can win the next week.
It's a body of work game for me. I'm just looking at that going, okay, what about their body of work? Utah and Oregon remains interesting. I wrote this today at johnconzano.com. If you're interested in the whole inside baseball, inside the game angle, I talked to Kyle Whittingham, talked to Jonathan Smith, talked to Dan Lanning, reached out to Jay Cornegay, who sets the lines for a sports book that operates over 6 states. So he's one of the biggest bookmakers in the country. They take more bets than anybody in America in college football. They are the biggest, sports book, so to speak, operating across 6 states. And I asked Cornegay, where do you get, like on a Bo Nix thing, like, you know, how do you flip that line? Because they went from Oregon -3 to Utah -3, like that, when Chris Hudson made the comment earlier in the week, and he said, you know, obviously Bo Nix is out, it's next man in. Jay Cornegay got on the phone. He got in touch with other sports books. They tipped each other off. I said, how does that work? He says, well, we kind of have a gentleman's agreement to share information with each other. So the bookmakers are all talking to each other. Guys, Jay Cornegay told me that they set their lines, the greatest resource when it comes to injuries in college football, because there is no injury report, is Twitter. He said they know they have about 4 to 6 people that they follow at every school. By the way, they follow me, and they look and they go, all right, we're tracking injuries. We're trying to figure out who's going to play. They are listening, and they are watching on Twitter. He says Twitter is the best resource that the books have. That shocked me. Does that surprise you guys?
It's a little shocking because there are so many trolls on Twitter. But I guess if you have the right people that you're following, right? Like, they must know who's in the know for different schools because there's all these beat writers and things like that. So, yeah, it does surprise me. But at the same time, like, I get it because there is a lot of information out there. And it's just if you know the right people, you get it first.
And in talking to him, what I gathered was, you know, there are some programs that have 18 or 20 beat reporters. Like if you go to Georgia, Alabama, LSU, there's a bunch of beat reporters. So I got me thinking about something. This is just my brain. And I started thinking, like, you know, there are a lot of programs in major college football that don't have large press contingencies that follow them. Like Oregon State is one of them. Okay, there's like 2 or 3 people that cover Oregon State. Not very many. And there's a whole bunch more that cover Georgia. And so I said to Cornegay, like, you know, you probably don't know that Oregon State's going to be without a couple of starters. And he's like, no, we don't have that information. And there's no injury report. So, you know, Kyle Whittingham said on this show earlier in the week that he would support an injury report if everyone else did. He says he sees no advantage in sharing information about injuries unless everyone else is going to do it. Dan Lanning on yesterday's show, boom. He says, I'm not going to talk about Bo Nix's injury. That puts us at a disadvantage. Jonathan Smith said the same thing on this show this week. He said, hey, I'll do it if everybody else does it, but until then, you know, everybody's on their own. I reached out to the Pac-12, and I said, hey, would you be in favor of a conference-wide injury report? Because the NFL has a rule where if a player doesn't practice, it has to be reported. Like, you know, the 49ers go out and Deebo Samuel doesn't practice. The 49ers have to put that on the injury report. He did not practice today, and here's why. If they don't do that, they get fined. And those fines are significant. They're not cheap fines. So the NFL takes this very seriously. Then on Friday, everybody who plays fantasy football knows that Friday, here comes the injury report for the weekend games, and the teams have to list players who are not going to be available. If a player is not making the trip, if he's not going to be on the plane, and they don't list him as out for the game on the report, they get hammered by the NFL. So the NFL wants to know who's going to make the trip, who's questionable, who's doubtful, who's out, you know, and if you don't follow those rules, you get in trouble in the NFL. Now, I thought that gambling was the only reason why they did this. But then Jonathan Smith said something in his interview on the show this week. He said it's not that. He said from his standpoint, the football's not as good if you're having to make an adjustment in the first quarter versus being able to know on Thursday or Friday that somebody's out. Hey, here's what we're going to do at the beginning of the game. And it's a great point because I'm coming back to fans in general, your teams. If you're the Pac-12, you want your best teams to win the games. You don't want any deviation from the best team winning. Pac-12 goes to great lengths to try to game the schedule a little bit so that the best teams get an easier path. USC isn't playing Washington. USC's not playing Oregon. That's not accidental, okay? There's a rotation that is happening, and they're going, okay, you know, it's set up here so that we don't cannibalize ourselves. So the Pac-12 is doing that, but is not willing to go one step further and go, look, you know, the greatest, most prolific adjustment you have in a game is an injury mid-game, right? It happens in the NFL. It happens in college football. Coaches have to adjust. But why in the world would you put your teams in a position where they have to make an injury adjustment from kickoff? Like, as if Bo Nix gets hurt in pregame warm-up, or as if Cam Rising is hurt in the pregame warm-up. You ideally don't want that to happen if you're the Pac-12. May the best team win. Football should be about players. It should be about coaches. It shouldn't be who gets to keep the best secret has the biggest advantage at kickoff. So I'm not blaming Dan Lanning alone here. I think he's part of a system. I think the Pac-12 should really look at going to an injury report. I'm told they've looked at it and they can't get consensus from the coaches. But we had 3-0 this week with coaches saying, hey, I'd support that. Hey, I'd support that. So I think, you know, what do we need to do? We need to get 12 coaches on this show and hammer it out. But there it is. Like, yeah, it is a big thing for gamblers. But it's also, you know, how many Oregon fans are saying, I don't want to go to the 7:30 kickoff on Saturday night at Autzen Stadium because I don't feel like Bo Nix is going to play. Like, you should know if you're having a ticket to the game if a player's not going to be available. You should know. That's my point. Coming up, we're going to hear from John Robinson, the longtime USC coach. Who does he like in the rivalry game of USC and UCLA? What advice would he give to Dan Lanning, first-time head coach at the University of Oregon? John Robinson, coming up next.